Welcome to the Empowerment Zone with Ramona Houston, where we zone in on Black and Brown relations and our journey to empowering our communities.
Hello, welcome to my podcast, The Empowerment Zone with Ramona Houston. And today I'm so excited that we have Roy Johnson of Birmingham, Alabama. I had the opportunity to meet Roy a couple of years ago at the AG Gaston Conference, and I'm so excited to have him. He is a journalist, entrepreneur, and media consultant. As an award-winning journalist, he has worked in all types of media. He was the editorial leader of several prominent publications, including the History Channel magazine, digital editor-in-chief. He was with Men's Fitness at mensfitness.com, where he served as VP and editor-in-chief. With Sports Illustrated, he was assistant manager, managing editor, and with Fortune, editor-at-large. So, and he's also founding editor of Savoy magazine. Additionally, in addition to his media experience, he also was co-writer with several athletes on their autobiographies, including Charles Barkley, Magic Johnson, and Avery Johnson, who were all formerly with the National Basketball Association, the NBA. And currently, he is a columnist at AL.com, which stands for Alabama.com. In addition to his journalism, he is also a life coach and wellness consultant, where he helps individuals to lead healthy and fulfilling lives, as well as manage stress and achieve their goals and dreams. So it's always great to have a coach on your team. And so I look forward to hearing about that work. I didn't know he was also a wellness coach. So welcome, Roy, today to the Empowerment Zone.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Ramona. It's a pleasure to be here.
I'm glad to have you, particularly with your work in journalism and your work as a writer. As a historian, I know how important it is for African-American and Latino communities to write our own stories. But not only that, write stories from our perspective, as well as write stories where we have a certain amount of objectivity as a journalist. Everybody comes in with their own biases, but we also have to be objective as journalists. So it's great to have you here. And so what I would like to begin with is, could you tell our audience what your professional trajectory was in terms of becoming a journalist and how you grew into that role?
I always smile and laugh when someone asks me that question, and how did I get into journalism? My response is always the same, is that journalism was in me. I was the editor of my junior high paper and high school paper. And when I went to Stanford University, I worked for the Stanford Daily, as well as the radio station, where I was both a newscaster and a DJ. So that was fun. I had two different voices for each role. I grew up in Tulsa, Oklahoma, which many are now learning was the site of Black Wall Street, which is, of course, very significant in Black history. And it was the largest enclave of African-American-owned businesses outside of Harlem, which is why it was called Black Wall Street. And this was in the early part of the 20th century, just as Jim Crow obviously was in its heights. African-Americans built almost a city. You know, I was a part of Tulsa that was self-sustaining and very profitable and thriving. I grew up later on in the last days, as I call it, of Black Wall Street. I was born in the 50s and was 8 years old when the Civil Rights Act of 64 passed, and my father took us down to the Piccadilly Cafeteria in Tulsa to eat for Sunday dinner, because we had not been able to do that the week before. What I recall about the experience was that I didn't enjoy it because the food was horrible. I wanted to go back to Betty's Chat and Chew in our neighborhood, which is where we normally went for Sunday dinner. But Dad was trying to teach my brother and I a history lesson. And I use that story because it gives, that's the perspective that I have. I'm one of the few people, I'm just sort of as young as you can be and still remember segregation. So a lot of those experiences from Tulsa drive a lot of my writing today as a columnist, where, I offer an opinion on the, people and trends and ideas and debates that are going on throughout America. In between, I spent most of my career in New York. My initial job was in Sports Illustrated, at Sports Illustrated, and ended up spending about 20 plus years covering sports, primarily the NBA during the Bird Magic era and towards the beginning and some of the heights of the Michael Jordan era. Covered pretty much every major sport in the world, traveled the world covering track and field, covered the Olympics in Seoul, South Korea. One day early on in my career, my mom, how moms like to brag on what their kids do. My mom couldn't figure out this journalism thing, and she said, "Let me get this straight. You get paid to go to basketball games." Mom is a little bit deeper than that, but essentially she was right. So, but had a great experience covering that, college basketball, covered some great games, covered tennis, Wimbledon, the French Open, the U.S. Open, came across and associated with some great athletes and human beings during that period of time. But as I matured, I found myself wanting to stretch out of sports. And so I had the opportunity to cover finance for a little while at Money Magazine, then to evolve at Fortune Magazine and covering business and sort of combining business and sports. Was able to do cover stories looking at the financial impact of Tiger Woods on golf and on Michael Jordan on the entire economy, and looking at an emerging NASCAR in the late 90s. They've been in the news lately as it was starting to try to begin pulling itself out of its southern roots, but also did a number of other stories, including a package called The New Black Power, which was a pretty groundbreaking package for Fortune magazine at the time. Many people in the magazine industry, and some still feel today, that you put a black person on the cover and it won't sell. John Huey was the editor of the magazine at that time and had been a mentor and becoming a friend. And so he encouraged me to look at what I call this emerging generation of power leaders in business and to do something that would be pretty special for Fortune magazine. It ended up being a 20, almost 30 page package and a triple gatefold cover that year ended up being the second highest selling issue of the year behind the Fortune 500 issue. So wow. I was proud of that. And of course you see African Americans on covers now more regularly. During that period too, I was inspired to come up with an idea for a magazine. At the time there were only really national magazines for African Americans were Ebony, Jet, Essence, and Black Enterprise. Yes. There were a few others out there, particularly in the hair field, but in terms of the large brands, it was that big four. And I was a little perturbed that magazines like Vanity Fair and GQ rarely featured African Americans inside and never had them on the cover. And so I had an idea and a concept for a magazine that was similar to them, but would feature people of color. It took a couple of years. I actually had to leave Time Inc. at the time and started a company with some friends, a company called Vanguard Media. Bob Johnson, then the owner of BET, was an investor, as was another group of African-American venture capitalists. And we founded Vanguard Media, and for, I believe it was 4 years, the company not only launched Savoy, but we had several other magazines as well. And we happened to be very successful, but also launch in the midst of a tough time. The first sort of internet crash was in the late 90s, and so we were caught up in that. And so eventually the company did not survive. It was a great run and met some great people, many of which are still working in the media field. We stay in touch and share great stories about that experience. So that took me back to Sports Illustrated, and then ultimately worked at the company that produced the History Channel magazine and digital properties. And being a bit of a history buff, this was like a fascinating job for me. I learned quite a bit. I learned as much as my readers learned as we explored history from so many angles and from so many perspectives that you know, we were always surprising ourselves with what we learned. If you've been in the magazine industry or been in media for the last several years, you probably experienced some ups and downs, and my career was no different. Between 2008 and 2014, I was laid off three different times just based on the contraction that the industry was going through. But I always believe that setbacks also create opportunities, and being able to work at a place like Men's Fitness would not have happened had I not been laid off at Sports Illustrated. Ultimately got laid off by American Media, which owned Men's Fitness, and would not have been able to work at the company that produced the History Channel magazine and digital properties. And then ultimately, when that company lost its licensing agreement with the History Channel, it gave me the opportunity to explore outside of New York, and I was able to land here in Birmingham for the Alabama Media Group. And being in Alabama at this time and this age, I've been here 6 years now, never a dull moment here in terms of stories to write about. I first arrived here covering sports. And of course, you know, sports is a huge, it's huge here. It's almost as huge as church, maybe even bigger. Yes. Maybe even bigger. So I was initially covering sports, did that for 2 or 3 years, and then was given an opportunity to helm Birmingham Magazine and then ultimately to write a column. So that's pretty much been the journey. It's more and more fascinating every day, particularly at this time in this place where we're in the middle of a pandemic, which has exposed some of the longstanding health disparities that have existed in this country and finally called attention to it, as African Americans are dying at twice the rate of whites and being infected disproportionately to the population. And then, of course, on top of that, we have the murder of George Floyd, and we've seen the Rashard Brooks in Atlanta, and just created what I think is an unprecedented convergence of crises. And as I said earlier, crises create opportunity. And this has an opportunity to really transform America. So it's great to be on the front lines of this story at this time, at this point in my career. I think the years leading up to this prepared me for this moment, and it's been fascinating to be in the midst of it.
Yeah, let's talk about that in terms of this crisis moment that America is currently experiencing. You know, when you talk about being a journalist, what do you think you bring to the interpretation of this moment and how you look at it in terms of the crises that we're experiencing? And as you stated, it's an opportunity to transform America at the same time. So what do you see in terms of your role as a journalist at this moment?
My role as a journalist has always been not just to tell the story, but to dig beyond where everyday men and women are able to go. You know, the covering sports, literally you were sitting courtside, you were in the locker room. So I had access to people and places that the fan didn't. And so my job was to interpret what I saw for the fan. That's no different whether you're covering news or anything else. And so having this opportunity to be on the front lines of an epidemic, on the front lines of an awakening in America, there's an obligation to not just unearth facts and realities, but also to, as a columnist, filter them through my own perspective, through my own experiences, and through my own opinions, and offer a deeper insight beyond the everyday reporting that my colleagues do and do wonderfully at. As I share with people, a journalist's job is to share what happened. My job is to tell you whether what happened was great or sucked. So you know, I get to do that, and that's a great privilege, and it's one that comes with obviously some costs, you know, responsibilities. You want people to respond to you. But I've learned over the years that love me or hate me, just read me. I've got a lot of what I call friends who reach out to me every day and not every day, but almost every day. Yeah, pretty much every day. And with their views, which happen to be different from mine, many are racial in tone. Some are even threatening, but that's not new. And I wrote a column recently, and it turned out that depending on who you believe, whether there was a noose found at a NASCAR garage close to where Bubba Wallace, the only full-time Black driver in the sport, was staged. But, you know, most people who do things in the dark are cowards, and who do things anonymously are cowards. So, you know, anybody that wants to send me an email and threaten me, that's fine. You know, they want to call me whatever name in the book, that's fine. We pass them on to the authorities, and most of these people aren't smart enough to understand. We can find them if we really want to. But it's a fascinating time to be a journalist. It's an even more fascinating time to be a columnist and be able to offer my opinion and my perspective. And I am grateful for being able to work for a company that supports that, that not only gives me the platform and the freedom to share my perspectives, but encourages it and then offers me the support afterwards to ensure my safety and well-being.
And that's good. You always want to work for a company who's affirming and supportive of your work because it makes it much more, it makes it easier and much more fulfilling and when you work for a supportive company. So, you know, there's so much going on when you talk about Alabama in terms of COVID, as well as the whole issue with NASCAR and the debate about that. So I'm sure you're keeping extremely busy in terms of how you're interpreting what is going on in our nation and in specifically the community of Alabama right now. So I want to know, you know, for we began to change where individuals also have the opportunity to write their own stories because of the growth of the internet and our ability to talk, whether it's in short form or long narrative about our own experiences. But I want you to give us some advice for people who want to pursue the career of journalism and what you would advise to others in the journalism field.
Well, I think everyone should write down their story. Everyone should share their story. They should take the time to contemplate where they've been and where they are. You know, we've often, you know, most people do vision boards now and put on paper or on cardboard where they want to go and what they want to be. And I think it's important to look backwards to a degree too, and to write things down, to chronicle this time, to chronicle this journey. So I encourage everyone to tell their story, even if they just tell it to themselves in a journal. But most people have a story to tell. Everyone has a story to tell. And one of the things that's emerging today is encouraging people to share their stories, have people get to know each other better by sharing where they've been, because where we've been shapes where we are and how we respond to everyday life, how we respond to crisis, how we respond to other people. So it's important to share that journey with everyone. Anyone who wants to be a journalist, my first words of encouragement are make sure that it's something you're passionate about. The best journalists are passionate about information. They're passionate about excellence. They're passionate about pursuing the story and pursuing it again and pursuing it even more. Journalism is a 24/7 job. It's not a 9-to-5 job. Depending on what you do, you might end up in places that could be dangerous, places that could be challenging. We had two journalists here in covering the protests in Birmingham who were arrested, and unfairly so, in my opinion. And it was traumatic for them. These were young journalists who had never been arrested and suddenly found themselves as part of the story. We had another colleague who was attacked by protesters. I have a white colleague who was punched in the face while he was out trying to cover the story. So it has been interesting to watch everyone mature in this process and learn how to grasp onto a story that no one really saw coming, and it's been great to see their growth. So if you want to be a journalist, be curious, be factual, make sure that what you're writing is the truth. If you have the opportunity to express an opinion, make sure you do it from a sense of compassion, from a place of understanding, and from a place where it can be backed up with some with facts as well. But I love this profession. I think it's an empowering profession. It's one that has never been needed more than it is now, particularly when there are so many, I'll say, just sort of fly-by-night sites out there that post content that is either not true or pushing a certain agenda that tends to take a nugget of truth and subvert it in a different way. And yet consumers take that information and many of it share it as if it is legitimate news. And so there's a big challenge today for all news organizations to cut through that clutter and to provide people with facts and depth so that these discussions that we're having at least are able to come from a place of reality. I had an exchange with an email person the other day, and often when, you know, I've been very critical of the current president and his administration, and of course they always try to throw Obama in my face for whatever reason. And this person said, Obama never spoke out on protesters, on looters. It took me about 30 seconds to find four links where Obama not only spoke out, he did it publicly, he did it in depth. I think one was in 2013, another was in 2014, and 2015, and then again most recently. And I sent it back to her. I said, just take the time to Google your madness before you start speaking. How many people had she said that to and just believed it in her heart? And said, it doesn't take a long time to verify your perspective or what someone else tells you. But unfortunately, we're in an era of a lot of false, I don't even call them false truths, they're just lies. There's a lot of misinformation floating around out there. So I think it's incumbent upon journalists to just keep screaming from the top of the mountain the facts, the truth, and hopefully we'll be able to cut through this clutter and get through this on the other side, to the other side.
Thank you. That's great advice in terms of if you're going to be a journalist, at least tell the truth, you know, and back up your facts, your opinions with the truth. That's so important because we have so many people now publicizing their opinions that are not based on any type of fact. And it ends up circulating as fact.
And that doesn't mean we always agree. I enjoy debates. I enjoy dialogues with people with whom I have a different perspective. And a lot of my emails, I include the phrase that, you know, respectful people can always disagree respectfully and civilly.
Yes.
Unfortunately, we got to a point where the civil part and the respectful part have disappeared. And I always strive to try to bring that back. And at the end of some days, we're just going to disagree. But that's okay. There's no law that says we have to agree on everything. And it would be pretty boring. My kids don't even agree with me on everything. So the world would be pretty boring if we did. But we just do hopefully have to get back to a point where we can disagree civilly without just yelling and screaming at each other and deciding that this person's a bad person because they disagree with what I believe.
Well, isn't that what debate is all about? Is listening to different perspectives and then, you know, seeing how it can influence your own perspective or how you can influence others. But like you said, it becomes, we have to do it in a civil and respectful way. Now it's almost like we don't have an environment which is conducive to civil debate and civil discourse.
Well, I try to reserve my space for that. I don't allow anyone in who doesn't want to have a civil discourse. I'll just politely tell them thank you for writing and have a great life. So we all take the time to try to control our own space. That means controlling ourselves too, because it's easy to get caught up in the vitriol. It's easy to get caught up in the emotion of an argument or even a debate. So it starts with us and how we handle those who may have a different opinion. And then if you can talk yourself through it, you know, the person's either going to come with you or you just let them go. So it really starts with us.
True. I have so many things I wanted to talk to you about, but we're running out of time. I still wanted to go to your work with these athletes and writing their autobiographies. And if anybody that knows me, I'm a big advocate for people writing their stories, and I wanted to hear more about that. But before we go, will you please give us, you know, since Tulsa has been in the news recently, you being from Tulsa, a former resident and member of the community there, can you give us one little unknown fact about Tulsa that you would like to share with us, whether it be about the Black Wall Street or just Tulsa community in general?
Well, I don't know if it's an unknown fact or anything would be unknown, because there's a lot of information that has emerged about Black Wall Street, about Greenwood, which was the main street that ran through that business district. Just on a personal note, a lot of people don't know that my father actually owned a store that existed in the last days of Black Wall Street. It was a drugstore. I call it the Black Happy Days. It had a jukebox, it had a soda fountain. You could buy everything from scarves to candy to over-the-counter drugs and get yourself an ice cream float or a banana split. You know, the fact that I was a chubby little kid was should not have been surprising given my access to candy and ice cream. But my dad did pay me when I was young. He paid me 25 cents an hour. So the only thing that kept me from being too fat was the fact that I had to pay for Sundays. So that kept me a little bit down. But if you see pictures of me as a younger child, I was a little chubby. And the store was called Kyle Sundry. And I often wondered why it didn't, and my dad's name was Roy Johnson. Like, why was it called Kyle's? And what I learned later on, he died when I was 12, but I learned later on that he was a bellhop at the Mayo Hotel in downtown Tulsa and had saved his money and bought the store from Mr. Kyle. And when people would ask him, why didn't he change the name? He said, because the sign still worked outside. It was a big neon sign outside. So, a little frugal. He was not going to spend money on a sign when it was not necessary. So there is a plaque right now on Greenwood, commemorating the spot where the store stood. Most of the buildings in that area were wiped out by what was called urban renewal at the time, which was really a cloaked governmental way to destroy everything that had been built down there. You know, only one building remains, and that's Vernon AME Church, which happens to be the church I grew up in. It's one of the few remaining buildings. Now, the building itself wasn't standing, but the foundation survived the 1921 race massacre, which we're going to celebrate the 100th anniversary next year. So everyone will be hearing more about that. But Vernon AME was built on a foundation that survived the race massacre and is getting a lot of attention these days as people begin to think about how to celebrate that anniversary next year.
Yeah, so that ought to be a nice affair to attend as a historian and as a person who's interested in African-American history and preserving African-American history. So we look forward to hearing about that celebration. If there is anybody that would like to contact you, do you have a website or where can they find your writings, or are you on Twitter? Would you like to share your information with our audience?
Sure. I'm easily found. I'm one of the easiest people to find. My Twitter address is at Roy S. J., R-O-Y-S-J, and it's the same on Instagram. I am on Facebook. I have a page, Roy S. Johnson Journalist, where I archive a lot of the stories that I've written through the years. And I love the thing about the internet is that you can find so much. I found stories that I forgot I had written. I use that page to archive those stories. So certainly you can go like that page, but certainly follow me on Twitter at @RoySJ or on Instagram, the same address.
Sounds great. And if they want to read any of your current journalistic work, where would they go?
The easiest thing to do is to Google RoySJohnsonAL.com. And what will come up is a page that literally archives everything, every column that I write. So whether it's my current ones or old ones, if you just Google RoySJohnsonAL.com, look for the page that comes up in a link, and all of my columns will be there.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. I really enjoyed hearing your story and just how you look at journalism today and debate today and how we interpret our stories today. But thank you very much for coming. I look forward to having you back so we can have a more extensive conversation.
All right, Ramona, thank you for having me.
Thank you. Hello, welcome to my podcast. And we have Mr. Roy Johnson here today, who's going to give us one piece of advice for strategies for college success. Hi, Roy. Could you tell us about your school major and one piece of advice you would give to students pursuing higher education?
I attended Stanford University, where I majored in political science and minored in communications, ultimately rolling that into becoming a journalist. Anyone who wants to pursue a college career, for me, the journey is relatively simple. My advice is to remain curious, to always read, to always be in search of information, of facts, and just be dogged about the pursuit of more and more information, and particularly information that might be different from your own perspective, whether it's books, whether it's listening to podcasts, whether it's just doing internet research, but just to continue to be curious. Curiosity is the foundation of success for just about anyone, no matter what profession they want to pursue. The other bit of advice is to have integrity, to pursue excellence, to be fair, to listen, and to be part of a solution that you would like to seek, not just for yourself, but for your community and anybody that you come in contact with. So be curious, be compassionate, and be dogged in the pursuit of excellence and success.
Thank you very much. That's great advice for all of us who want to pursue higher education. Thank you so much, Roy.
Thank you.
A special thank you to the incredible team of the Empowerment Zone. Terry Ongully, theme song. NADWORKS, digital support. And of course, our featured guest.
If you enjoyed my podcast, please subscribe. We are on all of your favorite podcast platforms. Be sure to rate us on Apple Podcasts too. Thank you for your continued support.